Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Civ CEO 6 by Andrew Karavik, narrated by Neil Hilligers. Chapter 1. Overnight, the world of Lyora had changed. Thanks to the destruction of the tradesmen, we found ourselves facing a new and exciting task, claiming all the free land in the continent. At first it seemed like a simple matter of who got there first. The first person to place a scout in the land could call dibs, and everyone else would simply have to look elsewhere. Then the wars started. Territorial disputes, border conflicts, and then outright invasions. In an instant, Lyora had gone from being a relatively peaceful nation to a war-torn country, where everyone was fighting for themselves, either for survival or supremacy. I could quickly see the writing on the wall for the nation of Tyne. Either prepare for the coming wars now, while I was still relatively safe, or be annihilated once the dust settled and the more ambitious champions started moving south. And so, a security coalition of sorts was formed. The South Lyora Defensive Union, actual name pending, was put together, composed of three world-class powers and two minor nations, ensuring that the South would be safe from any single champion coming in. A great defensive pact was agreed upon. Mess with one, and you mess with five. Such a threat would keep away any but the most suicidal of champions. Yet, even before our first official meeting, whispers reached my ears of other nations having the same idea. Large tracts of land were hard to defend alone. Unions were beginning to form everywhere in Lyora, either by peaceful agreement or by force. The smaller champions were absorbed by the greater, given protection and autonomy in exchange for mustering rights during conflicts. Those who did not have the right to fight for their independence were eliminated. By the end of winter, Lyora had fundamentally shifted. My world had changed. Gone were the days of dealing with single leaders. Eight unions now existed within the continent, eight powers that formed substantial opposition to one another. There were still some holdouts here and there. Small champions who held tactical choke points making invasion impossible or too costly were scattered about, though their own ability to grow and expand was cut off by their loss of surrounding territory. How long could they hold out? The fundamental question on everyone's lips was the purpose of these new coalitions. Were they, like us, merely intending to defend one another from invaders? Or were they ambitious champions, realizing that multiple nations fighting a common enemy would easily overcome them? I do not know the answer to this, and that was going to be the primary question addressed by the coalition's first official meeting. The carriage driving me and my beloved wife to the meeting hall hit an especially hard bump, jostling the woman lying in my lap awake. Joanna sat up immediately. "Are we there?" she asked, smoothing out her gorgeous yellow dress. The first days of spring were upon us, and though the heat had not returned, she was dressed for a day in the sun. "Almost, my love," I said, looking out the window. Yusuf, a minor member of the council, had agreed to host the council meetings on his land. A great circular building sat in the distance, looming above us all. With magic, Yusuf had raised a meeting hall and named it Paradisia. And indeed, it was a paradise of sorts, for a great garden of the lushest green vegetation I had ever seen surrounded the outside. Great flowers of red, blue, and violet rose to the height of a child, swaying gently in the spring breeze. Though these plants should not have survived the winter, Yusuf's magic undoubtedly gave them the ability to ignore the harshest of winter conditions.
"Run the checklist again,"
Joanna said as she continued to rouse from her slumber, quickly grabbing a brush and straightening out her hair.
"Just to be safe."
"First article will be naming the damn union," I said. "Then we formalize roles. I take the economic and diplomatic arm."
"We take those too,"
Joanna corrected. I huffed at that. Though our marriage was blissful so far, I kept making the unfortunate habit of saying I instead of we, despite the fact that we both were now co-owners of Tyne. She never passed up the opportunity to remind me of this slip-up. Frankly, it was getting to be a little grating. "Yes, yes, we will take those two. Harold will be placed in charge of the Security Council, and Chase will be in charge of threat assessment and eternal data collection, whatever the hell that means." Joanna nodded at that.
"Good, good."
She drew in a sharp breath. "You seem nervous," I said, leaning back, still watching out the window as the Paradisia building grew larger and larger.
"And you aren't? We're about to make history here. The entire south of Lyora unified under one banner?
I shrugged. I never much think about the significance of what I do. I'm just trying to make sure Tyne survives all this chaos.
Well, one of us needs to think about the history books, Joanna replied, sliding a paper to me. Hence the speech I wrote. Stick to it.
I glanced at the paper. Her handwriting was quite sharp and easy to read, nothing like my own scribbling. This is good. Really good, I mused.
Thank you, my dear.
The cart rolled to a stop. We're here, the driver announced. I glanced at my wife and swallowed. You ready?
Are you?
I was much calmer before the vehicle stopped, I replied. With a sigh, I turned and climbed out of the cart. The enormity of the day seemed to land atop my shoulders. Truly, this was a day where history was to be made. Our coalition would decide the future of Tyne and of Lyora as a whole. Would we be able to band together and put aside our differences, able to secure our nations as one? Or would agendas, infighting, and petty disagreements threaten our cohesion, keeping us from rising above? This meeting today was only the beginning. With an exceptionally harsh winter now over, all champions were available to meet and formalize this union. But what exactly were we formalizing? There were many rules to create, many guidelines to agree upon. Diplomats would have to be assigned to this hall at all times to handle the complex issues that could crop up between any nations at any time. And this was all internal. There was even more to consider when it came to dealing with the various alliances from the outside world.
Ah, there is the most lovely couple, Yusuf cried as he spotted my wife and I traveling through the rose garden.
The Magician King looked healthier than ever, his face beaming brightly at us. He was sporting the most robust of pointed goatees, which gave him a sharp, clever kind of look. His arms swept wide to hug on to my dear Joanna quite tightly, a hug which she reciprocated. When they finished their embrace, he merely shook my hand, nodding to me. Yusuf, it has been some time. How'd you fare over the winter? I asked.
Fine, as usual. Little trouble, to be honest. Magic can make the winter seem as if it were a rather pleasant ordeal, the man said, rubbing his hands together. But I have been eagerly awaiting the first official meeting of our Grand Union.
As have I, Harold said as he stepped out of the open doorway. In stark contrast to the healthy and fat Yusuf, Harold looked terrible. He sported a ragged beard, untrimmed and wild. His eyes were sunken and yellowed, and his clothes did not look to be so clean. A little too eager, I must confess. My God, man, I said, surprised at the state of the normally prim and proper general. What happened to you? I've been trying to figure things out, Harold said, shaking my hand firmly as ever. Putting everything together in my head, and that translates mostly to wandering about. I lowered my voice and leaned in. Savannah is safe in my dungeon. She's recovered from her wounds. Harold shrugged. I'm trying not to think about her, actually. He shook his head as if trying to snap out of some stupor. Come on, let's stop dallying. Michelle and Chase are already here. They're waiting in the Elmira meeting hall. I raised an eyebrow at the title. I glanced at Yusuf, who grimly nodded at me.
I thought it best to name our main meeting room in memory of her. After all, she would have certainly joined this alliance as well.
That is too true, I agreed, strolling after Harold as he led us into the halls. The Paradisia building might have looked elegant and extravagant on the outside, but the interior was drab and dull. There wasn't even carpet, just cobblestone flooring.
I don't want to seem crass or particularly stingy, Yusuf said, anticipating my thoughts as I looked at the barren walls. But magic was primarily spent on raising the building, and the plants were free. I'd need a budget to actually make the interior nice, and, well, I suppose that's something to vote on.
It's fine, I said.
Hideous, my wife whispered. I'll have to send my girls here to furnish the place. We can't possibly expect to have any kind of prestige with a building like this.
I nodded in agreement to that sentiment, but said nothing. My head was too busy preparing for the task in hand. Though I was familiar with each member of the council individually, this would be my first time addressing them as a group. This meeting would set the tone for our entire future. I just hoped that I could provide them all with the right kind of leadership.
Chapter 2 I didn't know whether to be impressed with the Elmira room or intimidated, for it was not a simple conference room, like I had hoped. Rather, it was a veritable United Nations of sorts, an indoor amphitheater with hundreds of desks lined up on each level. There was a central podium in the semicircle at the bottom for a speaker to address the audience. "Yusuf, are you insane?" I asked. "Don't look at me," Yusuf said, pointing to my wife. "She gave me the plans. I merely cast the proper spells. But the exterior was my own designs, by the way." "Dear," I said, nearly hissing the words as I looked at her, "are you out of your mind? There's five of us total." "Today, five. Tomorrow?" Joanna asked, not even bothering to face me. She pointed at the dozens of desks on each level. "These aren't just for leadership, but representees, diplomats, peacekeepers and petitioners, scribes and poets, reporters and government officials. You can't build a grand union without space for all the people it will attract. And don't forget, my love, we must have space for our enemies as well." "I don't question the wisdom, I merely question the ambition," I murmured as Chase and Michelle both waved to me from their respective seats. They were separated by two desks, and their presence amongst the vast amount of emptiness was simply absurd. I waved back to them, then motioned for the rest of the party to move to their respective seats. All eyes were upon me as I made my way to the podium. I found myself relaxed a bit more once the familiar faces of my allies were present in the room. Clearing my throat, I spoke, noticing how my voice seemed to carry and echo across the room as if the podium was mystically amplified. "Today marks a new chapter in our collective histories. For today, each individual nation will make the choice to band together, to put away our own individual needs and desires, and instead come together as a single union, a union dedicated to the common good of each citizen over our nations, dedicated to a single common defense. But I do not stand here today to promise you things will go smoothly from here on out, for we are not the only powers in Lyara who have thought of such a union. Indeed, you are all firmly aware of the growing powers to the north, the far east, and even to the new western border, who have all been unified under one banner. And though each banner is composed of many nations, they will all have the same direction ultimately. Our coalition will be mighty enough to stand against a single nation with ease, but against another union? God forbid such a danger should come, but great men and women who have the ambition to unite a nation often have ambitions for even more. We will be facing threats someday. And so, this council is not banding together for peace everlasting, but to be adequately prepared for the trials and struggles of the future." Frowns and grimaces came across many faces. Even the woman who wrote these words that I read was scowling. We were all hoping for peace and prosperity, unparalleled safety, but alas, such hopes could not be achieved without work. I continued. "So today is the beginning of a new saga in all of our own nations, the day that we are ready to face whatever is coming towards us. Sacrifices must be made, egos must be put aside. We must learn to contribute as best we can, for if we cannot be united, then our coalition will falter. If any of you have your own reservations about giving up individual autonomy or desires to reap only the rewards of a coalition without any of the work, then I would invite you to kindly take your leave." Here I paused, as underlined in my speech, to dramatically wave towards the door. Harold, in his infinite lack of decorum, made a mocking gesture of standing up, but quickly seated himself, snickering as if he were truly a master of comedy. Such an action made me smile, though. Even in spite of what he was struggling with, trying to contend with his own demons, he was still Harold. "Then, it is time for us to formalize this union once and for all," I thundered. Names for this union were proposed by all five members and were subject to a blind vote, and I am proud to announce that the name for our grand new union will be... I trailed off to produce the sealed envelope from my coat pocket. This was, in my opinion, a silly way to agree to a name, but Michelle insisted that this be the only fair way to do it. Our first vote would be to name ourselves. I tore open the envelope and read the title out loud. The Lyorian Commonwealth Alliance. A good name. When I first spotted it in my own vote, I had sorely wished I'd come up with something better than the South Lyoran Defensive Union. Commonwealth had a much better sound to it, an alliance for the common wealth of all. With the name announced, a murmur of approval rippled out. I don't know how many people voted yes, but I got the impression that everyone did. With that matter settled, I had something to enter into the great picture. Much to my surprise, there was an entire branch of cultural values dedicated to creating these kinds of organizations. Thanks to Tyne's increased education due to the new educational policies and the presence of several philosophical buildings, I was able to quickly research these values over the wintertime. Well, at least I was able to research the basic values which would allow me to create the official system. Then it is time for us to make this official. You'll receive a vote on your great pictures momentarily, I said, bringing up the screen in my own vision. Create union. Select name. Select all union types that apply. Economic allows for taxation, trade regulation, and economic policies to be incorporated into the union. Political dissolves all present political titles and roles. All cities will be incorporated into the union. New titles and city assignments will be assigned by vote. Military allows for control of a percentage of each member's military, as well as controlling military spending. Security force creates an independent military that can be funded and supplied by members. Legislative allows for introduction of laws and regulations that all members must follow if ratified. The selections here would be economic and security force. Economic was meant to allow for our nation to also function as a proper trade union, allowing members to securely trade with one another and to ensure regulations that would prevent inflation from running rampant. One side effect of the massive taxation policies and cost of working with the tradesmen was that they kept inflation at a relatively low amount. Now, with unrestricted trade, a lot of money was pouring into the economy at unsustainable rates. In the short term, this was great, for everyone had plenty to purchase what they wished. This unrestricted flow of access to goods quickly led to a scarcity of said things, and as a result, this raised prices, effectively lowering the buying power of those who had saved up their hard-earned gold. Even the great picture began to increase prices steadily, growing by a solid 10% by the end of winter. While most folks, champions included, were content to merely grumble about the cost of goods going up, I was quick to recognize the issue. While I couldn't insulate the rest of the world from getting overcome with inflation, I could work to ensure our own alliance would have a steady control on such a concern. Thankfully, my letters to the four initial members were all accepted without much of a fuss. No one understood what I was talking about other than Yusuf, and he was wise enough to adhere to my thoughts on the matter. As long as our economic controls didn't limit champions and their ability to spend and save their own money, nor impacted their people in a negative manner, I would be free to begin building regulations to prevent inflation from annihilating our savings. The matter of military was a lot more, well, colorful in our discussions via letters. No one could agree on any one policy. Harold wanted the rights to commit to offensive wars in the name of justice, a term he so loosely defined that cutting him off in traffic could be grounds for a war, while Michelle absolutely refused to entertain the idea. Eventually, an agreement was made, one that required a bit of research on my part, finding a cultural value that would make everyone happy. The security force value allowed us to create an independent military force. This military would be directly funded by the union's budget and could only perform offensive actions with a full vote of the Security Council. To ensure Michelle would join the union, and to counterbalance Harold's warmongering, she would be placed on the council, as well as myself. The security force would not muster troops from existing powers. Rather, this military would recruit from any interested citizen of any nation, even those from the outside, offering citizenship to those who served. Economy and security force were the only selections we would be making at this time. I had been interested in perhaps talking legislation as well, but no one else was interested in that. Everyone was willing to pitch in, but giving up total autonomy by subjecting themselves to laws about any subject matter? No one was for it. I finished selecting the name and watched as the words Economic and Security Force Union, pending creation, hovered above the entire assembly. Everyone glanced up as well, looking at what I can only assume were the same set of words. A vote had been called for, the great picture said. A new tab opened up, revealing an entire page dedicated to the Lyorian Commonwealth Alliance. I read the proposal. Ratify creation of union. Votes needed, 5. Proposal. The champions of Tyne, Aetherdome, Othos, Mount Gimli, and Sitago agree to join the Lyurian Commonwealth Alliance. By joining, they agree to operate under economic conditions as set forth by the Alliance, and to obey and observe the rules and regulations set forth by the head of the Union. By default, members will be divided into voting and non-voting. Majority vote determines introduction of new policy and modifications to Union settings. In the event of a tie, non-voting members will vote on the issue as well. If a tie is sustained after that, the vote fails. Simple rules for a system that would become undoubtedly complex as the years went by. I was quick to select the yes option. One by one, the votes ticked upwards. Vote passed. The Lyurian Commonwealth Alliance has been created. Positions must be filled immediately. Select the following. Chancellor, the head of the Union, calls for meetings, introduces general policy, may veto votes, and summon council leaders. Economic Council head, introduces economic policies to the council for voting. Economic Council member, votes on economic policies. Security Force General, introduces military policies and has direct control over security militia units. Security Council member, votes on security policies. Voting member, votes for general policy issues. Non-voting member, considered a member of the Union, but only serve as tiebreakers when it comes to voting. Now was for the real test. Who would nominate themselves Chancellor? But before I could open the floor for discussion, four votes came in instantly, all nominating me. Was this discussed? I asked. I had been expecting a bigger fight, and frankly, I wasn't really looking to take on the whole role of Chancellor. Yes, I put this whole thing together, but damn it, there was a lot more work for me to handle at home.
You didn't expect one of us to take it, did you?
Harold asked, speaking the group's thoughts out loud. They all eagerly nodded at that sentiment.
You created this. It only makes sense that you're the boss.
So that was it. This really was my show. Fair enough, I suppose. Though I had secretly hoped that someone else might be willing to take the burden. I was established as Chancellor and head of the Economic Council. Harold was installed as General of the Security Council, with Chase, me, and Michelle as voting members. In total, we had four voting members and one non-voting. Yusuf did not seem too eager to have any special part in this union, other than enjoying the fact that he would be protected by his stronger allies. In some ways, I envied him. All he needed to do was pay his taxes to us, and then, when trouble came knocking, wait for Harold or me to handle it. Well, I said after the preliminary voting finished up and all memberships were assigned, if you thought that was riveting, you're going to enjoy the next 8 hours as we figure out economic and military policies. Before Harold could groan, however, there came a loud banging on the door. All eyes turned to see the thick, sturdy doors swing open as a man, armed with a saber, came bursting in. What in the world was going on? Chapter 3.
I apologize for interrupting,
the saber-wielding man said as he strolled in, sword held high. Half a dozen soldiers dressed in red uniforms came pouring in from behind him, lining up to block off the exit. Harold immediately leapt into action, a great claymore forming in his hands at once.
I don't know who you are or why you're here, but I've been dying for a good reason to get into a fight, Harold bellowed. Let's go!
Hold it, the man said, bowing slightly to us all. He was a roguish fellow, with a red officer's coat, golden buttons lining the sides. He had a small, pencil-thin mustache and was paler than the moon. He was about the age of 25 or so, but that counted for little in this new world where magic could hide a man's age with ease.
I've not come to make war, but rather to make an impression.
And that impression would be what exactly? I asked. That you had the capacity to bypass our defenses? Though the man wielded a blade, I could see his clothes were smoothly pressed and the weapon lacked any bloodstains. They must have teleported in to evade the exterior's guards. Though we really should have put someone in front of the doors as well. The rogue grinned widely at that.
Friends, Romans, and country folks, my name is Copperlin, and I am a grand representative of the Northern Central Collective.
The Northern Collective? Damn, which one was that again? I glanced over at my wife, who merely shrugged. The man continued.
The Collective sees your attempts to unify the South through divination and through common sense, and we like your moxie, so to speak. So,
Here is the deal. You cannot burst into a council meeting and begin dictating demands, Yusuf said, standing up and pointing a finger at the man. It is both an insult and an impropriety.
Yusuf speaks truly, I agreed. If you are a representative, you seem to lack the good sense to respect our process.
But you've not even fully formed yet, he replied, still grinning like a fool. And our offer is so good, you might not even want to bother forming.
Harold growled once more and looked at me.
I make a motion, is that right? I make a motion to expel the outsider with extreme prejudice and violence.
I second that, Yusuf grumbled.
I held a hand up to settle them down. Our first official interaction with another alliance shouldn't be one that would start a war.
You have an odd way of conducting yourself, Mr. Copperlin, but I am willing to hear you out.
Copperlin smiled and bowed deeply again.
Excellent. The Collective has this offer. Our forces number in the tens of thousands. Our economic strength is vast and our industrial ability is immense. Rather than splinter into your own alliance, join ours instead. It will ensure peace between all countries involved.
That's the message, Harold growled, getting his sword ready for a charge. Sounds more like a veiled threat to me.
It did sound like a threat. Were we surrounded? I quickly checked the great picture to see the map. Nothing around us but miles of flatland.
Copperlin smiled. Well, it's not a shakedown per se, but it is a very firm suggestion. Lyara's possession of a beachfront property makes the Collective extremely eager to earn your allegiance. Without it, we'd be landlocked. In exchange for joining us, you'd all be looking at positions on the Council, which come with major salary incentives.
And if we refuse? I asked. Copperlin's smile became a little less bright and a bit more sinister.
Well, that's the trouble. The NCC is insistent on this merger. As it stands right now, we have 8 champions in our union, all properly outfitted for war. I don't know how things were for you last year down here in peaceful South, but up in the central lands of the North, it was a straight-up war zone. We are armed, powerful, and above all, eager to get out of our landlocked position. So this isn't quite a declaration of war, because you are all still in the process of building your little union. To those who don't want to be embroiled in the Battle of the Century, you might wish to switch sides now.
I glanced at the rest of my group. Everyone other than Harold looked quite unnerved at this sudden ultimatum. Our alliance was barely 10 minutes old, and already we had an enemy force breathing down our neck? Ridiculous. Although, something about the timing was off. Why come in the middle of a meeting? Why make a scene rather than meet each member of our alliance one at a time? There could only be one answer here. Theater. This Northern Central Collective might not be in the position to strike all 5 of us together, but in reality they only needed to invade me, since I owned beach properties that controlled the Great Harbor. This was an attempt to get my allies to abandon me, freeing up the NCC to hit a single target. I had to speak quickly to dissuade the fears of my colleagues.
So you have 8 champions in your union, I asked. Indeed, powerful all in their own right, Copperlin thundered.
So, why dilute their power by bringing in 4 or 5 new people? Why not simply crush us all and take our land? As an invader, you could simply take what you want, no reason to pay us or split up the existing power structure, I pressed.
All eyes turned to Copperlin to see his response.
We aren't savages, he retorted, stumbling over his words. We'll give far more than we take.
Yet you resort to extortion, Harold said, picking up on the bluff.
Friends, this man's collective has not the power to fight 5 of us together. He seeks to divide us now, or at least cast doubt on this union, so that one of us might turn against our allies later.
I know a song and dance when I see one, Yusuf agreed. You best be leaving before we make you.
Hold it now, Copperlin stammered. He can't possibly think you'll stand a chance against 8 of us. That's 8 entire nations. We border Tyne now, and frankly, we will have little trouble smashing our way through his paltry walls. You don't have to go down with Charles here.
I don't want to be the jerk here, Chase said, clearing his throat as he spoke up. But shouldn't we just grab this guy and use him as a hostage?
Copperlin's eyes went wide at that, and he stumbled backwards, holding his hands up. I'm just the messenger.
Yes, and right now the messenger has 10 seconds to leave before I let Harold do whatever feels right, I said. Yeah.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?